Clean against Napolitano is our fifth case for the morning.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. My name is Rebecca Whiting, and I represent the plaintiff, Ms. Trinidad Clenny, in the instant proceedings. Ms. Clenny is a permanent resident of the United States who filed her action in the Northern District Court of Illinois following the denial by USCIS of her application for naturalization. Ms. Clenny argues that original jurisdiction was proper under Title 8 of the U.S. Code of 1421, which provides that the naturalization applicant has the ability to seek de novo review of her application following the issuance of a final decision by USCIS. As part of her complaint, she maintained that the district court was authorized to grant relief in the form of a declaratory judgment as well as under the Administrative Procedures Act. Following her, following the filing of her complaint, or approximately a month later, the government issued a notice to appear affecting removal proceedings against her, alleging that she was no longer entitled to the green card status that she was granted back in 2001. Approximately a month after that, the defendants filed a motion to dismiss the complaint on the basis that the district court did not lack, or that the district court lacked subject matter jurisdiction over her APA claim, and as well because the Congress afforded her an adequate remedy before the immigration court. They also argued that the case would be dismissed under 12b-6 for failure to state a claim, because the court cannot grant relief in this instance due to the fact that removal proceedings are pending. The defendant's position is
that... What is the current status of the removal proceedings?
Her removal proceedings are still pending before the immigration judge.
What's the current status of them? Where are we in this process?
Pleadings have not been taken in the immigration proceedings. They have been initiated, but the immigration judge...
Still very early.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The defendant's position is that only the Department of Homeland Security can naturalize her, but is unable to do so until her removal proceedings are over. The district judge granted the defendant's motion under 12b-6, indicating that although it does not believe the 1429 divest the court of jurisdiction, it believed that the motion to dismiss was proper, as the court cannot grant any relief requested to my client. In an attempt to preserve her ability for the right to review, the district court dismissed the action without prejudice, indicating that she could refile her action, assuming she was successful during her removal proceedings, or in other words, assuming the Department of Homeland Security was not successful in substantiating their claims of removability. The issues, therefore, are just whether 1429 is going to foreclose judicial review pursuant to 1421, and if it does not, what relief, if any, can the district court grant to my clients? We respectfully argue that the district court has erred in their finding. We do not maintain that 1429 is applicable to this instant case, but even assuming that it is, the statute still does not divest the district court of judicial review. First, the plain language of both 1421 and 1447B clearly establish that the district courts have jurisdiction to review naturalization applications. Second, the legislative history also shows that it was Congress's intent to grant district courts judiciary review of an application that had been denied by the immigration agency.
Is it your position that 1421C is itself a jurisdictional provision?
Yes.
Why? Why isn't jurisdiction here dependent on, say, 28 U.S.C. 1335, which provides jurisdiction for suits against the United States and its agencies?
Correct. We believe that 1421...
Excuse me. You cannot answer a question with the word correct.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your Honor, our position is that 1421 clearly conferred jurisdiction for this case.
And why do you view that as a jurisdictional provision? That's my question.
The intent behind this legislation?
No, that's not where subject matter jurisdiction comes from.
We believe, this section gives the district court jurisdiction to review the proceedings, because without 1421 relief being available to an applicant, then there is no judiciary review whatsoever of a denied application for naturalization. That would indicate that only the Department of Homeland Security has the ability to decide a naturalization application and will have the final decision.
I just don't think you're getting it. The Supreme Court has been trying very hard in recent years to unscramble the difference between substance and jurisdiction. 1421C looks to me like a substantive section. It might be essential to waive sovereign immunity, although that isn't clear in light of Section, I think it's 702 in the Administrative Procedure Act. But subject matter jurisdiction comes from statutes like Section 1335 or Section 1336, which authorize the district courts to take jurisdiction of cases. And the Supreme Court has been, as I say, it's been trying very hard to get people to stop thinking that authorizations for relief are the same thing as grants or denials of jurisdiction.
Well, as part of Clunny's complaint, she argued that original jurisdiction was proper pursuant to Section 1331, which allows for judicial reviews of claims arising under federal laws, as well as 1421 to receive the de novo review on her N-400. And then as part of that, she also argued that the court could authorize relief through the APA as well as the Declaratory Judgment Act.
You know, that's exactly the kind of thing the Supreme Court has said needs to be avoided. It's now clear to me that you are treating authorization to award relief the same as subject matter jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court has told us to stop doing that. This actually cuts in your favor, so it's not clear why you're resisting, but this model of treating the authorization for relief as jurisdictional is gone, and in fact, this Court recently and unanimously en banc overruled an earlier decision that had made that mistake.
In going back to our further arguments as to why this jurisdiction is still proper with this with the district court, which is something that is addressed within many of the other recent circuit court holdings, the legislative history shows that it was in Congress's intent to provide these safeguards. Historically, prior to 1990, the Attorney General was authorized to review removal proceedings, whereas the district courts had sole authority to review naturalization applications. What ended up happening was that individuals could be within both processes at the same time, and individuals were filing naturalization applications after removal proceedings had already commenced in an effort to become naturalized before there was a final decision on their application. So in 1950, Congress enacted Section 1429, which indicated that a naturalization application could not be heard by a court if there was a pending proceeding. The Board of Immigration Appeals thereafter issued two different cases, the matter of B as well as the matter of Cruz, which indicated that an individual who was in proceedings who already had a pending naturalization application could seek the benefit under Regulation 1239.2F to have their case terminated. Following these decisions, or in 1990, Congress decided to enact the Immigration Act of 1990, which is codified at 8 U.S.C. 1421. And as part of this, Congress was trying to streamline the naturalization process, but it clearly did not remove the courts entirely from the N-400 process or from the naturalization process. And this is shown that at the same time that 1421A was enacted, 1421C was adopted. And this basically reaffirmed the right of a petitioner to judicial review. The bill's sponsors, as well as amendment, which was addressed in the Third Circuit's recent holding in March of this year, show that it was acknowledged by the Judiciary Committee that the whole purpose of this bill was not to strip a person's review of judicial entitlement. And for that reason, we believe that The district court can still remedy this complaint by issuing a declaratory judgment, which will speak to the lawfulness of my client's denial. We agree that in order for the district court to have a meaningful review of this case, it does have to issue some kind of remedy, but it is able to do so in that effect. And it is able to do so because 1421 does not strip the district courts of any type of review of the N-400. It only speaks to their ability to review it in the first instance. And in this case, the USCIS clearly had years to review the application and chose not to do so. It denied the case, and then only after did she invoke her right under 1421 did it place her in proceeding, thereby eliminating any relief that she would have had before the judiciary. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Whiting. Mr. Rydell.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court? My name is Deary Riedel. I'm a trial attorney with the United States Department of Justice, and I represent the appellees in this matter. This case is about giving effect to Congress's intent to prioritize removal proceedings over naturalization claims. This is done through a harmonious reading of the applicable statutory provisions, 8 U.S.C. sections 1429 and 1421A and C, which results in a consistent and coherent statutory scheme. The appellees respectfully suggest that the district court lacked jurisdiction over Ms. Clenny's claim for two reasons.
Well, I must say I got the same question that I asked of Ms. Whiting. What does anything, excuse me, in 1421 or 1429 have to do with jurisdiction?
Your Honor, defendants would argue that Section 1429 bars judicial review.
1429 prohibits a certain kind of remedy. It says you can't order the Attorney General to do something in circumstance X. The Supreme Court is now, I think, pretty well established that that is not a limit on jurisdiction. There are all sorts of statutes that restrict available remedies. The Prison Litigation Reform Act does. I mean, Norris LaGuardia Act does. You can list them off, but the Supreme Court doesn't view those as affecting jurisdiction. Are you acquainted with our opinion in Minkem?
Minkem.
It's our recent en banc that I referred to.
Is that the case spelled N-K-E-N?
Well, if you have to ask how it's spelled, you're obviously not acquainted with it.
My apologies, Your Honor. But
we try, as the Supreme Court has been trying, to disentangle rules that concern the merits or appropriate remedies from rules that concern subject matter jurisdiction. And I must say, under the Supreme Court's approach or ours in Minkem, there's nothing here that looks remotely jurisdictional.
Your Honor.
One way or the other.
As to the question of jurisdiction, appellees argue that not only does Section 1429 bar judicial review, but also Ms. Clenny fails to demonstrate standing. She fails to show how any order by the district court can redress her claimed naturalization injury.
Well, let's suppose the district court followed, or we were to follow, the Third Circuit. And the Third Circuit says it is the Attorney General can't be ordered to do anything. That's 1429. But it is permissible, the Third Circuit said, to enter a declaratory judgment. And then Clean would take her declaratory judgment and file it in the immigration proceeding and say, it has been established that I did not commit marriage fraud. Right? That's how one usually uses a declaratory judgment. One usually uses it in a preclusive way. Federal courts issue declaratory judgments all the time, but one would think from reading your brief that every declaratory judgment is incompatible with Article 3.
Your Honor, several points in response to answer your question. First of all, as a preliminary matter, declaratory relief is not properly before the court. Ms. Clunney did not receive declaratory relief in district court, nor did she
receive it. That's why she's the appellant.
Correct, Your Honor. However, Ms. Clunney did not argue for declaratory relief in district court, nor did does she argue for declaratory relief in this court.
So, you certainly thus, heard her do it on her feet. She wants us to follow the Third Circuit.
Your Honor, in her briefs, she does not make a declaratory argument, an argument for declaratory relief, and thus she waived and or abandoned this argument. As to whether declaratory relief is appropriate in this case, appellees make three arguments. First of all, in light of Section 1421A granting sole naturalization relief to the Department of Homeland Security, it is doubtful that the Board of Immigration Appeals could rely on a declaration of prima facie naturalization eligibility issued by the district court. Second of all...
Oh, so you think the executive branch of government would defy the judiciary on this?
No, Your Honor. If the district court...
Good luck.
No, I do not, Your Honor. If, as a second matter, the declaratory relief...
You're essentially saying that federal courts can't grant declaratory relief in cases involving the United States. The Supreme Court has held otherwise. If you've got a serious argument, you should make it.
Yes, Your Honor. There are two additional arguments I would like to make as to declaratory relief. Second of all, declaratory relief is not necessary in this case because Ms. Clunney will receive judicial review. And third of all...
That's a different point. A district judge would have discretion in parallel litigation cases. This is where declaratory relief is used a lot, where there are suits or actions pending in separate courts. And we've said, and the Supreme Court said, that a district court has discretion not to grant declaratory relief in those cases. And we've said appellate review is deferential. But the question here is not whether the district court would abuse its discretion in declining to grant declaratory relief. The question is whether the district court's got any power if it thinks that declaratory relief would be appropriate.
What question would Your Honor like me to answer at this point in time?
Whatever you think is your highest priority.
Your Honor, the third point, in addition, and the third reason why declaratory relief is not proper in this instance is because the provision of declaratory relief in this matter would restart the race between removal proceedings and naturalization claims, which Congress intended to put a stop to in 1950. Going to the Congress's intent, the legislative enactments from the 1950s, from 1990, and subsequent underscore Congress's intent to prioritize removal proceedings over naturalization claims. In 1950, Congress put a stop to the race between removal proceedings and naturalization claims by prohibiting a naturalization court from hearing naturalization claims while removal proceedings were pending. In 1990, Congress amended Section 1429 to place sole naturalization authority in the Department of Homeland Security in an entirely administrative process. Congress did provide for judicial review, but it did so as under existing law at that point in time. Subsequent to 1990, Congress has further consolidated an alien's claims in removal proceedings. Thus, Congress's intent since 1990 to prioritize...
I get worried, and I think the Supreme Court gets worried, when the first recourse of a lawyer is suppositions about legislative intent and not the legislative text. Now, is there anything you're relying on in the text of 1429 as blocking a declaratory judgment by the district court? The text of 1429, as I read it, says, this is the third sentence of 1429, says that the Attorney General, now the USCIS, can't naturalize somebody once an immigration proceeding is pending, once a removal proceeding is pending. That's what the text says. It doesn't speak at all to the powers of courts. Is there some reason that you have why we should not enforce the statute as written?
Your Honor, a harmonious reading of sections 1429 and 1421A and C leads to the conclusion that section 1429 bars judicial review during the removal proceedings for the following reason.
What text of 1429 are you relying on?
With the permission of the court, the authority of a court to review the Department of Homeland Security's sole naturalization authority, in this case, the denial of naturalization application, cannot be any greater than the naturalization authority in the first instance. Thus, because Ms. Clenny does not have a right to have her naturalization application considered pursuant to the language of Section 1429, it follows that she cannot have a right to judicial review under Section 1421C.
That would be true if she had been put in removal proceedings before the agency made its decision. But when the agency made its decision, this was before the court.
Your Honor, defendants, appellees rather, argue in this manner that the time...
I'll let you finish your thought.
That the timing of when removal proceedings commence does not affect the jurisdictional argument. Several circuits...
We've been through whether this has anything to do with jurisdiction.
Yes, but several circuits have considered and have whether removal proceedings commenced after a naturalization claim is brought affect the court's analysis, and those circuits have held that it does not, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
Taken under advisement. Our final case of the day is...